Hello, and welcome to an epic episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? Because I had a tweet that went wrong, and it was one of the best, worst experiences in the sense of why didn't they laugh. I did a tweet comparing Beyonce's depiction of the Black Panther Party to the Ku Klux Klan, and people got super pissed on Twitter, because Twitter does that. And before I even get to these interviews, I apologize in the sense that it wasn't funny, because usually I do hyperbole all the time. I can compare Trump to Hitler, you know, and it's like clearly they're not like the Ku Klux Klan is significantly different than BPP. It's like the Klan is just a hate group. Black Panther Party was founded in necessity. You know, it was a group of people highly oppressed for a long time. And they but in my opinion, you know, they advocated violence against white people. And I'm against the Confederate flag. I'm against Trump. You know, I say this in each of these interviews, and I hate saying this shit because it always makes me sound like, hey, well, I have a black friend. But I'm like, I had a Jewish grandmother and my wife is Hispanic. So like anybody that's like, you're promoting the Ku Klux Klan. It's like, no, I'm okay. My tweet can't be interpreted as racist because I'm comparing something to the worst group I could think of, which is the Ku Klux Klan. What it is, however, is very insensitive to the black community. And so after just getting annihilated on there, I said, anybody wants to talk to me, I'm in. I want to learn. And I'm telling you something, I've since that incident, which is the day after the Super Bowl, I've read Survival Pending Revolution by Paul Alka Bulan. Yeah, it's been good. I'm about three quarters through that one. You know, I think they were pretty violent, but I get it. You know, it's like, if by any means necessary, if you're drowning, I get that. But now I'm reading The Burglary by Betty Metzger, and this is when shit gets interesting. This starts diving into Hoover and all the stuff that they did to try and take down the Panthers. And a lot of this, you know, I was raised that the Black Panthers in school, not my, you know, my parents are hippies. They don't give a shit about anything. I mean, they do about love and life and stuff, but we were told they were terrorists. So I reacted that way when I watched that halftime thing. And at the time I didn't, I thought it was cool. I was sticking up for Coldplay and Beyonce and everybody when Piers Morgan was running his mouth. I was like, no, you're jealous. We got better people in our country. And then later when a friend of mine talked about how disturbing it made him feel because he now felt scared that people were going to start shooting white people, I was like, yeah, that is stupid. And that's when I make mistakes, because comics don't a lot of times question their emotions. It's almost like fighting. Like when you're in a fight, if you know, overthink yourself, you get your ass kicked. But this is a situation where I realized from the responses, because I've never had issues like this before. I'm not a racial comedian. I don't care about this stuff. It's not my thing. I'm also not into pop culture. You know, and the few times I did Chelsea lately, I didn't know half the people they were even referring to. I always thought I like Beyonce's songs. They're catchy. But I have a hard time with, you know, racial violence advocation. So I on my Twitter, I said, if anyone wants to call in, let's do it. And I took, before I even get this started, I got to give props to a couple people that I could only get to two interviews. Let's see, Ali and, Dr. Jonathan, Farley, both awesome. You're going to like this. Brandon Cosby, much respect. He wants to be on. Very cool. We've been having a great conversation. Sloan Ivy out of Austin. You are awesome. And I'm so glad we've been having a dialogue. And there's a couple more. I didn't respond to people tweeting at me because they all seemed deranged. But let's see what else I got. Well, I'll get to them. Let me just read you a typical back and forth that I experienced. And this is why talking about stuff is so important, and why the immediate shutdown is so absolutely terrible. This one dude emailed me. I'd stopped responding to tweets, and it's completely died down now. Like, that's how it functions. It just comes at you and then bails. This dude emailed me, you really compared the Black Panther Party to the Ku Klux Klan? Are you really that dumb? Please cite one case where a Black Panther bombed a church, killed an innocent victim, blah, yada, yada, BPP, protected neighborhoods from cops. They also fed and provided clothing to people in their neighborhoods. You're a fucking idiot. You're a true waste of life. So my response was, a more accurate comparison would be the IRA. KKK is a hate group. The IRA fought against English occupation. My comparison was wrong. Nevertheless, still a race-based violent group. I apologize for the KKK comparison. That was super dumb. His response, I appreciate the response, and you are now correct. Whether their methods were okay or not, that's another topic, but your willingness to acknowledge the mistake is very classy. Much appreciated. See, I mean, at one point he wanted me to, and, you know, he said I was a waste of life, and within a second, it's fine. And that's the beauty of communication, and that's what Twitter doesn't have. It just doesn't. And I'm sure there's going to be tons of people that don't listen to this. Not that anyone really cares, but you can make mistakes in hyperbole and exaggeration, and then you get it going. I am going to plug some dates because this is a podcast. I'm a comic. This Sunday, Hollywood Improv, Valentine's Day. I'm doing the 8 o'clock show, and then end of the month, Tampa Improv, Thursday through Sunday. And I also want to tell you guys something pretty funny. People kept tweeting me like, I'm gonna get you fired. I don't think people understand how the world works now. I can't stand being in the center of controversy. That's why I do a podcast, and I typically do not tweet about anything like this. I didn't even know what I was doing was that racial. I didn't know how much backstory was involved in this shit. I just thought I was making fun of a dance. I can't be fired. I'm a comedian. I was on a sitcom for 3 years, and it was me. The lead was Asian. It was me. The leads were me, a black guy, Roy Wood Jr., who's now on The Daily Show, one of the funniest humans alive, and a Metamed. And then it was a Korean family, half Irish, Dan Laurie from The Wonder Years. Amazing. And it was the only show on TV that diverse that didn't make it the agenda. It wasn't like, look at how diverse we are. Steve literally wrote the characters, Owen, Roy, and Matt, about three of his closest friends. And we just happened to all be of different ethnic backgrounds. And it never mattered to us because comedians don't give a shit. And for 3 years, we're on TBS, okay? We're touring the country together, breaking even on this shit. We're not profiting. We're doing it to do morning radio. We're doing morning TV. We're doing everything we can to promote this show because it was our baby. It was our family. I just had a baby shower and the whole cast came. Like, we're still family. It was one of the best times in my life because of how close we all were. And we tried so hard to get articles written about us on Yahoo News, all these places, big news stations. We wanted to so bad. We're like, let's get race talking in America. Look at how you're connected, not based on your skin color or your ethnic background. It's like what kind of beer you like and what kind of team you like galvanizes everyone more than skin. Anyone who thinks skin is a thing is a fucking idiot, okay? That being said, as a white person, I do not understand the black experience in America, and I'm very sensitive to it. And whatever you guys tell me will help you out, I'm in. But I don't understand it. All I know is that we had this show and no one put us on Yahoo. You want to know what got me on Yahoo News? This stupid fucking thing. It's like, not only does it not hurt me, it makes me relevant in a way that I don't want to be, by the way, at all. Please take it all back. I do not like angry people. Anyone who knows my stand-up knows that my favorite thing in the world is to make the end of the room, whether or not I'm in all black Cleveland, all Hispanic, Miami, you know, San Fran, Seattle, Chicago. I love when people look around and say, we all think dicks are funny. We all like high-fiving, drinking, and we all feel misunderstood in our relationship. That's my whole career. I don't understand why America is more likely to promote in the news a mess up that I did. I still do not like race-based violent things. I don't think the Super Bowl is a place for it. I think comparing them to the Ku Klux Klan was a huge mistake, and I apologize, but I don't think it's not racist. I'm saying the Klan is terrible, so I don't want that. I'm against Confederate flag, Donald Trump's vision of Muslims. I don't like any race shit. I just don't. And I don't even care that much, but the fact I tweeted about it got people charged. And as we can see, the charging of America is so destructive. Look at Trump. Everyone's got an opinion. Whether they love him and they see him as the only guy who says his mind, man, or people being like, he is the devil. He may be fucking president, guys. Not only does this swarming of trolls not hurt people, it makes them relevant. But that being said, please don't do it to me because I don't like it. I like jogging. I like staying hydrated. I'm about to have a baby that's mixed fucking race, and I don't want to have to explain what, you know, what is what. I just want race and everything to just fucking dial down. But I said, hey, people, call me. Let's talk on the podcast. I want to hear what you feel because I'm sick of just having people go, cry your mayonnaise tears, cracker bitch. You know, after I started having a conversation with a young man about whether or not when he punched me in the face, was it assault or battery, I realized Twitter is a horrible place to discuss nuanced racial and socioeconomic policies in America. So I responded. So I got two people that could fit in this time slot. Jonathan Farley, I believe, is who we'll put up first. And then we also have Ali. Don't know either one of them. Never met either one of them. Couple email exchanges. They seem, you know, very experienced. They're different demographics. Jonathan is, I think he may have even been in the Black Panthers. I don't know. I can't figure it out, but he seems like he lived it. And now he's a professor of math. And I think that he was very front lines of all this stuff. There's a lot of NPR interviews with him. He has a book published. He's kind of like hipster civil rights. I said that to him during the interview. He's kind of like, and you know, in my day, there was actually dogs chasing us. You know, there, it was almost like a little nostalgia in it, which is fucking hilarious. So we'll play him. And then after that, we got Ali, who's also very, very great point of view. He has a point of view of a younger guy, has a young kid, you know, thinks about his kid being misidentified as a criminal and shot by the police. He's a really intelligent guy, and I'm staying friends with both these guys. And if they ever are in LA, I'd love to have him on again. There's a couple other people out there. I was talking to this other guy in North Carolina who, yeah, come on the podcast, sit here with me. I'm going to be honest with you, though. This is probably the last time I'm really going to dive into race because it's just not fun. It's not, you know, doesn't get me super fired up. But this is very fucking interesting of an episode. So listen in, check it out. It's the first time I've ever had call-ins because you'd be surprised how many people don't live in LA that were part of the Black Panthers, which is weird because it's out of Oakland. Huh. Okay, this first is with Dr. Jonathan Farley, and then the second one is with Ali, and then I won't be here to say goodbye because the time crunch tonight was so insane, but I just wanted to get this done, put a pin in it. If anyone has any opinions, they can, you know, let me know. They can email me, but Twitter is becoming the slime underneath the city in Ghostbusters. So much love, everybody. Subscribe to this, comment, spread it, share it. Let me know what you think. Whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. I love your points of view because it helps me because we're running blind. All I know is tall white dudes with adequate penises. That's my only point of view, who gets scared sometimes, but a lot of times they have an unjustified sense of self-entitlement. That's where I'm coming from with three dogs, sweet wife. You know, she's busting at the seams. She really wants to get this fucking baby out of her because it's probably a little too big because I'm coming in hot at 6'7", but that's the trade-off. You know what I mean? The baby's going to have a little more pigment from her Hispanicness and a little more height from my Scandinavian vibe, and that's going to lead to a really powerful human. All right, so check out these. All right, much love. Why didn't they laugh? Hey, Jonathan, how are you? It's Owen Benjamin.
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Dude, thanks for having this talk with me, and I appreciate you staying up. I know the East Coast is a little late. Yeah, I mean, I'm honored to be able to talk to you. I mean, you've done a lot of really cool stuff in your life, and you're from... Yeah, and you're into math.
I'm a mathematician, exactly.
That is so cool. And you were one of the people that responded to me on email, and I love to get the discussion going. And I just wanted to give you a platform to tell me anything you want to tell me about this issue. Because I do obviously apologize for comparing the BPP with the KKK. That's not fair. It's more, I've come to the conclusion it's more like the IRA, like the Irish Resistance, than it would be a full-blown, stupid, idiot hate group like the KKK. I was doing that as hyperbole, like to try and be funny, but it wasn't funny, and that's when it got kind of offensive to people. So we started talking, and I'm really glad to have you on, and I'd love to have you tell me anything you want to tell me.
Actually, I've been to Northern Ireland, Belfast, and also Derry/Londonderry. And I remember going to the Sinn Féin bookstore and seeing someone who looked like Gerry Adams, the head of Sinn Féin. And I went to the cashier at the bookstore when he left to ask if it was really him. And she said she'd go and get him for me. But he was gone at that point. But while there were some links, I had a book once about the connections between the Irish and the Black Liberation Movement. The Black Panther Party never even went so far as the IRA, because IRA actually killed people. Now, the Black Panther Party was, as you pointed out to me earlier in the day, interested in survival pending revolution. So they did inaccurately foresee that there would be some kind of revolution, which inevitably would be as it was in places like China and Cuba. But they actually didn't reach that stage in the United States. When they carried around guns, it was at least initially legal. The California legislature had to pass a law, the Mulford Act, in 1967, to make it illegal for the Black Panthers to do what they had been doing. One wonders where the National Rifle Association was when all of this was happening.
Right.
But the Black Panther Party primarily has a bad reputation because because of the affiliation with Marxism-Leninism, and also because of an FBI propaganda program, went into more than just propaganda, called COINTELPRO, a counterintelligence program, whose explicit goal was to discredit groups like the Black Panthers, but also groups like Martin Luther King's, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Yeah, see, those are the groups that I thought should be more honored. The issue I had was, do you think Huey Newton, he was convicted of killing a cop and a dancer, but do you think that was set up, or do you think that there was any validity to that?
Actually, there were three trials for the killing of the policeman, and there were two mistrials, and then he was acquitted. And the circumstances of that were, the cops were given the license plate numbers for the Panthers. They were following them around, looking for any opportunity to kill them. And so there was a shootout. It stands to reason that the cop was trying to kill Huey Newton, and
yeah,
you got a right to life, especially when it's your own life. In the case of the other case, Huey Newton fled to Cuba. This was around 1974, long after the party had basically disintegrated. And there's a documentary by someone named Lilu Lee, who said that, who cited a CIA agent who was saying that the Huey Newton you see in 1974 is the one we created. So there were serious psychological operations going on directed towards Huey Newton in particular to turn him into a paranoid, power-hungry person. But that was 1974. And in the 1980s, of course, Huey Newton became a crack addict and ultimately was killed by someone who apparently was fed in some of the programs that the Black Panther Party should be known for, their free breakfast for children programs, their free schools, giving away free groceries to people who need them, free visits to family members in prison.
Here's a question
and
I have.
That actually,
go ahead, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I didn't mean
well,
to cut off.
This actually is why J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, didn't like the Black Panther Party. In fact, there was an agent who questioned, why are we going after the Black Panther Party when they're giving away free breakfast for children? Why are we trying to disrupt them? And J. Edgar Hoover said, you've obviously missed the point.
And Hoover was a maniac. Someone emailed me about the COINTELPRO papers. I might not be pronouncing that right, but about there was an FBI, some of the BPP broke into the FBI headquarters and discovered the covert operations against King and their own party. Do you know much about that? Because I'm only a little bit in the book now.
I haven't heard of anything like a break-in, but what did happen was Senator Church, I believe from Iowa, had some hearings in the 1970s about the illegal activities of the FBI. So the Church Committee hearings revealed the existence of this program, COINTELPRO. When it was inaugurated in the memo, you can actually look at it. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy fact.
Yeah.
One of the goals was to, for example, prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. And it also says that the purpose of this new counterintelligence endeavor is to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize the activities of black nationalist hate-type organizations. But by hate-type organizations, Hoover included Martin Luther King in his organization.
Yikes.
So there are lots of dirty tricks involved. One of my favorites is the coloring book. So the FBI created a coloring book which showed black people murdering whites, and they tried to pass it off as something that the Black Panther Party had created in order to discredit them, as per the initial edict of the COINTELPRO operation. They would do other things, like with Stokely Carmichael. They created a letter that seemed like a note that was written between Stokely Carmichael and a CIA handler or an FBI handler or a police handler. And then they crumpled it up and left it in the car of somebody else who was in the movement, so that that person would find it and then think that Stokely Carmichael was working with the police or FBI.
Yeah,
so
no,
those
that's
were dirty tricks that they were doing.
There's some dirty tricks going on there. But see, I on a much, much smaller scale, and I know I'm not, I've learned my lesson about hyperbole and comparisons, but I feel like people were kind of doing that to me on Twitter. Like, calling me all these crazy names and telling me that because of this tweet, I was now a racist, when, if anything, I was insensitive. I consider myself insensitive to a lot of Black American issues, and that's for sure. And I've learned a lot this week from this experience. But my tweet in no way endorsed white racism against white. In fact, I was using a group that I feel to be the worst group in America, which is the Ku Klux Klan. I despise these people. And I thought that people were kind of using that to paint me as a racist. And that's why I just got very confused, and I just did not want to have that conversation on Twitter. And that's why it has to be more long form like this. How do you feel Twitter can sometimes do that? Like, sometimes take someone's words and make it as bad as they possibly can make it?
Well, first let me say, you can say five Hail Marys and drink some Kool-Aid, and you're forgiven.
Thanks, man.
All right. As an African-American, I can do that. We actually all have that ability. I learned my lesson in 2002. So this was, I'm pretty sure, before Twitter. But I actually dealt with, not the Ku Klux Klan directly, but people who supported the founder of the Ku Klux Klan, because I lived in Nashville, Tennessee, and they have there a taxpayer-funded statue of the first... they have all these funny names, like Grand Wizard or something like that. But he was the man who basically was the leader of the Ku Klux Klan at its inception. He actually had the power to disband it, at least, Nathan Bedford Forrest. And I said the statue should be taken down.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, of course.
And
it's a no-brainer.
I got a couple dozen death threats, hundreds of hate messages. My university, I was told, I read in the papers, got over 1,000 phone calls. And so naturally, the head of my university came out and criticized me. But what was funny was that, now times have changed so much that now it's those people who are on the run. We just saw in South Carolina, of all places, they want to just banish the Confederate flag. And even the Black Panther Party, well, I'm the last person to compare it with Confederates, it's now passé, and that's actually a good thing. So that's what I actually am happy about, that we're now so far removed from the bad old days of the 1860s and the 1960s.
Yeah.
That you can dance in a Black Panther Party uniform, and it doesn't actually have, or something that evokes it. And it doesn't really matter. It's just a good time, just a good party tune.
Right. And I think now that, I think one of the reasons I reacted strongly was because I'm not very aware of, there's almost like a revolutionary fashion, like a revolutionary chic that I'd never really experienced. You know, like I'll see people with Che t-shirts on and I just, you know, part of me is like, that's like Stalin chic. I'm not comparing Che with Stalin, although I am a little. I mean, he did kill women and children. Unless I've been taught everything wrong, I just think that whole like it's cool to wear like crazy shit sometimes is like, but I'm not opposed to it at all. Like if I was at a Beyonce concert and I saw her do that, I'd be like, oh, this is awesome. The reason I reacted was because it's the Super Bowl, and it's the same reason I don't like Donald Trump saying crazy stuff, is because it has to encompass everyone. And why couldn't it have been Martin Luther King Jr. or W.E.B. Du Bois or Du Bois or one of these other nonviolent activists? Why did it have to be that X, like the one group of people that said, violence? And there is documentation of them not liking white people. And although I am not part of an oppressed minority in this country, I'm not even left-handed. And don't even start about left-handed people. They go through a lot. Door handles, left-handed cars.
Yeah.
No,
you should write a book on that, actually.
Left-handed?
the discrimination against left-handed people.
Yeah, my brother's a lumberjack. He said that one guy is left-handed, and it's really bad with chainsaws because your dominant hand is so necessary. But anyway,
I'm a lumberjack, and I'm not okay.
like look at Hendrix. He had to flip his guitar around. Left-handed people have a rough run. But anyway,
I thought he was just doing that to show off.
Yeah, well, probably both. But that being said, I just don't get. I mean, I'm fine with it now. It's provocative. I've learned so much in this last few days just from this experience, just because I felt so right in my head that I was like, what are these people saying? And then, because I guess I didn't know enough about the Black Panthers, and I still don't condone some of their rhetoric. It is violent, but it's out of good. It's more kind of like a protective neighborhood type situation where I didn't realize they had the free breakfast. I didn't realize that they got doctors to take care of people, and they did all this community service. And there's really community service, to me, you can't go wrong. If someone's doing stuff for the neighborhood, that's great. But I guess from my education, it was so highlighted with violence and terrorism that from my point of view, I was not saying anything that I thought was even that controversial. And now I do realize how that can be seen as very offensive. And it in my head, it would be as if I would be very against Kid Rock waving a Confederate flag during a Super Bowl. And again, if I get in trouble for saying that, that's crazy, because I'm not comparing the two. One is an oppressive force. One is a force that's reactionary. And I understand the difference. But it's that lightning rod effect where people just are like, they feel separated. And even if Coldplay puts a bunch of flowers over everybody, they still have that like, you know. But just put yourself in the shoes of like a good-hearted cop who's like, oh man, that's a little scary. I shouldn't get involved. I'm not a racial comedian. If you go back to all my stuff, I'm not even that interested. I just want people to get along, because the more equal we are and the more rights everyone has and the more freedoms everyone has, everyone benefits, everybody. So that's why I really wanted to talk to you about this stuff and how like, whether or not the symbol itself was a little intense, or do you think it was just an active display of African-American pride?
Actually, I think it was just the fact that they were in the San Francisco Bay Area where the Black Panther Party was born. They were actually sort of describing the using the radical chic at the Super Bowl with, you know, the Haight-Ashbury type of icons, 1968. They're trying to evoke that spirit.
Right.
But the fact that people associate the Black Panther Party with negative violence is media propaganda. And also from the 1960s, African-Americans, it was actually considered, actually going back to the 1860s, it was actually considered to be an act of insurrection for an African-American to simply try to say, I'm a human being and I'm going to defend my life. I don't want to talk about myself a whole lot, but...
No, I love relevant. Don't talk about
when
yourself.
When I was criticizing the founder of the Ku Klux Klan, describing how the slave owners were, actually he himself had executed a bunch of black prisoners of war, obviously a war crime probably then, and it was certainly a war crime today. I was the one for having written an essay in a newspaper who was accused of being violent. And some people even said that if there's any violence as a result of my essay, I could be held criminally liable for it.
Wow.
So any African-American, at least circa 2002, who didn't say, I am exactly like Martin Luther King, and I'm going to turn the other cheek, was called basically a murderer. And it's absurd because the Confederates at the same time were praising actual murderers.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
There is holidays for actual murderers. We celebrate George Washington's birthday in February, and he was a revolutionary and he didn't win the American Revolution nonviolently. But you can't maintain a slaveocracy if you say that the slaves have the same right to self-defense that the masters have, or the masters, it's a master's claim. So that's really all that's going on when people think of the Black Panther Party.
Right. And and I'm just, you know, a lot of white people are just completely have no idea what any of this is. And the way you're describing it makes sense to me. It's just, it's really interesting how some people can have an American life and just have a very different perspective on stuff. And it's fascinating.
And in defense of the Black Panthers, I want to say that while there were thousands of people in the party and maybe some of them didn't like whites, in all my readings, I haven't seen any statement to that effect by the leadership. In their initial 10-point platform, they did criticize the white man and who was robbing the black community. But then they edited it in a second version and changed it to the capitalist. So, as I pointed out to you, my message to you, Marlon Brando, when the first person in the Black Panther Party was killed by a policeman, Marlon Brando delivered the eulogy. People like Leonard Bernstein were having fundraisers for the Black Panther Party. And they were as much interested in black power as they were interested in brown power, red power, yellow power, and even white power. I think Fred Hampton, who was the head of the Chicago chapter, was talking about white power. And so,
that's the only way out of this mess is it can't be race based. It's like I know what you're saying, but it's if they were against white people having power, that's to me that's insane. It's that old like decaying bullshit of America. I understand wanting to break that down, you know, but let's just say like a nice white person's born, they work hard, they go to college, they want a job, and imagine a regime in control that's like, no, we don't want white people in power anymore. And it's like, well, I had nothing to do with this old bullshit. And it's like, that to me is the issue where a lot of white people squirm, not because they want to keep, you know, black people down. I think a lot of them have similar lives in a sense, in a socioeconomic sense, not in a legislative sense. There's things in the books that are jaw-droppingly racist, and there's so many things that need to be changed in this country. But when it comes to just like the souls of humans, just being like, I just want a good life for my family. And if there's ever race put on that, I just think it's messed up. You know, I just think that any type of hatred towards a skin is weird. And to have people even look at me and be like, oh, KKK, it's like, dude, I have a Jewish grandmother and a Mexican wife. And I'm not using that as like crutches or get into a club thing. It's just like, it's preposterous to think that, you know, the my grandparents were like coal and lead miners. It's like, I don't, you know, there is privilege in the sense that, that white people can kind of just blend in and shoot up ranks and just fit in. And they don't have this legacy of disturbing violence against them. But there's also just a sense of like, what do we do about it? Like, how does just an average Joe white person that doesn't keep anyone down, they're not some multinational corporation CEO, how does that person just navigate this issue? Because you can't, as a white person, we can't say it's the same. We can't say, oh, I'm colorblind. Like, we're all the same, and not acknowledge the history of just rampant aggressions against African-Americans and what they're currently facing today. That can't be ignored. But at the same time, you can't just keep fighting legacies. You can't keep like pointing the finger at every white person being like, that's a plantation owner. Like, that just doesn't ring true. I see no reality in that. And so I just want to know what the future of America is for saying, let's heal, you know, and you're such an intelligent man. And I'm, you know, we've been emailing back and forth, and you're just the perfect, you and this other dude, Ali, that I interviewed for this are just perfect, because you're some of the first people that contacted me when I, on Twitter, said, I can't do this Twitter stuff. Someone has to talk to me like voice to voice. And I look to you to answer this. What is the future of America and how do we heal?
Actually, I think the future is now. With Barack Obama being elected president, America was saying, we don't care about the past. Now, of course, there are people who did experience segregation who are alive now. I myself had to literally flee Tennessee. But I look to the future. I'm happy with what I see. Even the police murders that take place now are of a different character than the ones that took place even 20, 25 years ago. And now some of the policemen actually do get prosecuted. Sometimes they get let off, but sometimes they do get prosecuted, like the case in South Carolina. So I actually think the prospects are great. It's just that as, you know, I responded to what you said only because of nostalgic reasons, because what the Black Panther Party stood for used to be something that I thought was of vital importance. And at the time that I thought it was vitally important, I think it was important. But fortunately, it is now just something in the history books. There was an era when something like the Black Panther Party was needed, and you'd be happy to hear that while the party was called the Black Panther Party, they were in favor of every community having power. They had white supporters. They weren't racist. And in terms of the violence, they tried to do everything legally as far as I can recall. Certainly, Huey Newton, the co-founder of the party, studied the law to make sure that the members wouldn't get arrested on stupid gun laws. They observed legally police arresting people to make sure that no abuses occurred. And even with Che Guevara moving across the continent, I used to be one of those people with a Che Guevara shirt. I actually even had a photo taken of myself with a Che Guevara banner in the background, but it was a banner that I bought in Paris. No, in Montpellier, France.
Yeah, now you get them at Urban Outfitters.
Yeah.
So, it's a little different.
I don't know as much about Che Guevara, but, you know, he's a revolutionary. And
I'm sure I know. I'm sure I don't know enough. I'm starting to learn that the older I get, I know so much now. And it almost leads me to pass of like knowing nothing, where someone could teach me about Che stuff that I know nothing about. And I like, kind of like this experience. And before we end, I do want to plug your book, just because you didn't even tell me to. I'm just doing this because it sounds like a fascinating title and I'm definitely going to read it. By the way, Dr. Jonathan Farley, book, How to Get Straight A's in College. That sounds like an awesome book that I should have read before going to college.
Well, I'd be happy to tell you or your audience. Thanks for mentioning it. About how to get straight A's in college.
Yeah, well, we got to do another episode though, because I forced my people to hook up all this technology to allow me to do these interviews. But If I could just ask one more question, I think a lot of people in America, and this rings true to all socioeconomic, racial groups, they have a feeling of hopelessness in the sense that they can't really do anything. That's why I think Twitter gets so out of control, because at least it's something, even if you're screaming at a comedian with no history of racial things, and obviously the tweet wasn't meant to put anyone down. I think that a lot of people feel a sense of powerlessness. And what is your advice to white people? Because I do a bit on stage now where I'm like, one of my black friends was like, you don't know what it's like to be black. I'm like, you don't know what it's like not to know what it's like to be black. Where, you know what I mean? It's this feeling of like, what do we do? Like, if you could just give advice to just average American white person that has no racial hatred, but is trying to navigate these waters and not sound like a jackass, like I can do, obviously, what do we do? Like, what do we avoid? What do we, you know, think about, like, how do we approach this issue of race in America?
Well, advice I would have given people like the University of Missouri president who stepped down is to not assume that everybody who is black is speaking for all blacks.
Mm, nice.
Hey, I used to be a big supporter of that kind of protest politics, but I don't support many of the protests that took place in the fall and the summer because I thought the issues were stupid and made up in some cases. It's not the 1960s. It's not even the 1990s with things like the Rodney King riots. Today, African-Americans as a group face problems, but the problems are not directly due to racism. And people who continue to say that are just idiots.
Do you think it's legacy? Do you think it's the racism set in motion, these systems that now are kind of... See, that's what I see. Some communities are racist. Like, sometimes you'll hit a city, because I'll tour, you know, I've probably done stand-up in 200 cities in America, and it's rare, but every now and then I'll hit a city where I'm like, oh, you guys are messed up. But usually it's people are still in a system that was created during a time when people thought white people were better than black people. And then now people don't think that anymore. Like, I don't know one white person that I'm even acquaintances with that believes there's a genetic superiority of white people. Like, that's dead. That's gone. I'm sure those are dinosaurs.
Who are, you know, octogenarians who will write stuff like this on the web, but younger people don't even listen to them.
So it's not even on the table. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I got an email this week about someone who just wrote a book who calls herself conservative black chick. So you've got blacks in the Republican Party who are making sense, even people like Stacey Dash. And then you've got blacks in the Democratic Party who aren't making sense, or some of the protesters. So the old era is finally gone. It took well over 200 years, but the racist America died, I would say, in 2008 for good.
So why do you think there still is racist systems in place? What do you think? It's because it's so hard to change. Like, it's almost like you can correct a snowball a lot easier than an avalanche.
I don't think there are. For example, at my old university, when I criticized the founder of the Ku Klux Klan, and my own university criticized me, some of those same administrators moved on to other universities, and what did they do? They went ahead and changed the names of some of the dormitories or buildings that were named after Confederates. So after the election of Obama, it was a different era than before the election of Obama. And so the very same people changed.
Wow.
So I think America, the old America is dead. Good riddance. Today, obviously, there are people who are 86 years old who suffered under segregation, but younger people don't really have that excuse and should just get on with building a great life. But to take it back to the Black Panther Party, it is true that the problems that plague American inner cities probably would not be there had the Black Panther Party not been destroyed and had it not been discredited by programs like COINTELPRO. And also, so that people don't think I'm whitewashing the Black Panther Party, there were criminals in the Black Panther Party. There were also agents provocateurs planted by the FBI to make it look like a criminal organization. And there were mistakes made by party leaders because they weren't professional revolutionaries,
right?
Getting everything right the first time. But I don't think any white American now needs to worry about being or sounding racist. They certainly shouldn't take any black protest group think that any black protest group is representing all blacks. And many of the black protests that I see today are actually not worthwhile. And I wish they would stay quiet. But having said that, I liked the dance routine. It's good that the Black Panther Party was portrayed in a positive way at the Super Bowl, even if it was just with some music. And you got to love Beyonce.
Yeah. Jonathan, you're the man. Thank you so much for talking to me, Dr. Jonathan Farley. Yeah, you have such an interesting insight. You're almost like a civil rights hipster, where you're like, back in my day, shit was actually real bad. You know what I mean? It's almost like I watched Radiohead before they did stadiums. You're awesome. I'm glad that we have a friendship now. Okay. And hit me up if you're ever in LA and you want to get on the podcast and talk about any topic you want. It's doors wide open.
All right, will do. Thanks a lot.
All right, brother. Take care. Why didn't they laugh? Thank you so much, Ali. I appreciate you doing this. It's really cool. I'm glad you sent me an email and that I love this. So thank you.
No problem. I'm always available for, you know, a productive, you know, discussion on this issue.
Absolutely. And since I tweeted that, people have sent me down these rabbit holes and I've learned a lot about BPP and the whole issue and all this stuff. And so I think that people like you that have had discussions with me, I think can be helpful for everybody. Because, yeah, my original intention wasn't racism. And you can see that in the fact that I compared them to a group that I considered terrible, which is the KKK. Like, I'm a quarter Jewish with a Mexican wife, as we were emailing. Like, I'm not exactly in their wheelhouse. But now I'm starting to learn a lot more about the BPP. And I think that the broad strokes that were taught about the Black Panther organization needs some enlightening. And you seem like a really smart guy that is in the position to do that. So I'd love to hear anything you want to tell me.
Well, you know, I kind of wanted to first start off with, you know, when you made that tweet, when you sent that tweet, you know, first off, I think you pretty much learned, don't go after Beyonce.
Yeah.
She's a major, major star, and her followers just generally have a louder voice. Not to say that, you know, people can't be criticized, and she did put herself out there in a very public way with you know, the Formation video, the Formation song, and then the halftime performance. So, like, don't. But it's really hard to attack people, you know, who have such a large following. So that's just kind of like a Twitter 101.
Yeah, you know, it is. Same with Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as your further point, you know, connecting the Black Panther Party with the KKK, I mean, obviously it wasn't a very adept analogy, considering that, you know, the KKK is formally, you know, first and foremost, a terrorist organization. They caused
right.
unbelievable violence and harm, and they infiltrated every level of government at that time.
Yeah, and they're a hate group.
Judges, exactly. And they were, and at the time in their heyday, you know, they were embraced by a lot of people. And whereas the Black Panther Party, you know, that was formed as a self-defense organization. It was formed out of conditions that existed in the 1960s that, frankly, still exist today. So, you know.
Yeah, I think a better comparison would have been the IRA, which was the Irish Liberation Group that fought against the British occupation of Southern and Northern Ireland. What my tweet did first and foremost, which is why it was so bad, which I do apologize for, is it wasn't funny. Cause you can get away with a lot if you're funny. Cause I used hyperbole. The KKK is the worst organization I could think of. And I do disagree with a lot of the violence that Black Panthers advocate. I do. I still do. I don't apologize for that feeling, but it's much different. It's the any means necessary mentality versus the group of hateful dickheads mentality. And that's where I supremely apologize because, you know, just like Irish, like the Irish groups that went after England because they felt like they weren't being represented and they were occupied. they start doing some pretty nasty shit. But then you have to ask yourself, if you feel like you're drowning, like, do you do whatever you can to get out? And I'm reading these books on the BPP, and, you know, I didn't realize that they provided food for children in Oakland. And, you know, there weren't doctors for certain people, and they would provide for that. And I think that if it wasn't for, you know, the Hoovers of the world that really wanted to keep down any anti-American sentiment, they probably would have matured into a much, you know, more just a very positive group of black support versus the whole, my spine tingles when it's one race better than the other. And you can listen to podcasts where I'm very against the Confederate flag, very against Trump's, how Trump feels about Muslims. I'm very against, I don't like any one race better than other race. And I shouldn't have compared them to the KKK for sure. But I also, what I wanted to discuss with you is what issues do you think face Black America today? What do you think should be addressed? What do you think people can do about it? And just whatever you want to tell me.
First off, let me address in the context of Beyonce's song and video, you know, she wasn't expressing that one race is better than another. She was expressing a sentiment of loving yourself for being Black, you know, loving yourself despite the fact that society tells you that you're not worthy of love because you don't conform to the social standard of beauty. Take her little example. So let's say, I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afros. You know, she's not saying, hey, we don't like you for being white. She's saying, like, you know, I'm proud to be Black. And I think that when you look historically and you see any type of movements that call for Black empowerment, any type of movements that call for loving the skin that you're in, that you get a very, very large backlash. And it's unfortunate that you were part of that backlash because, you know, as you expressed, you don't seem like the type of person that would hold up one race over another. But the situation remains, though, is that, you know, because of the very poor education that we get in this country about that segment of American history which pertains to Black people and which Black people are the main actors, you know, that a lot of people have formed opinions about, like, civil rights movement and about, you know, that history that really don't gel with what actually happened. So I'll say that first, and I'll also say that, you know, the same conditions exist today, the same things that the Black Panther Party was fighting for back then, the same conditions that existed then exist today. You still have the issues with police brutality. You know, police killed 336 Black people in 2015. Black people were three times more likely to be killed by a police officer than a white person. They were 11% more likely to be unarmed. In some cities, 100% of the people killed by police were Black.
Yeah, that's terrible.
1% of Black people who were killed were unarmed and not suspected of a violent crime. Okay? And in that situation, 97% of cases in 2015 did not result in a charge. So you have a sense and a feeling today that the government does not respect the constitutional rights of a segment of its population, of a segment of American citizens, and that's just ridiculous, especially when you consider 2016, you know, we have a Black president, you know, so you would think that the government would protect the people, and they're really not. I don't personally consider that the local and state governments protect me. I don't believe that, and
right.
I believe that that's wrong. You know, then you can also look at, you know, the economic equality, you know, employment, housing, education. We spend less money in predominantly Black schools than we do in other schools. You know, it's these same conditions keep cropping up time and time again. And as much of progress as we made in interpersonal racism, you know, I don't dislike you because you're white. You don't dislike me because I'm Black. We wouldn't be racist towards each other. That's not considered socially acceptable.
Right.
But institutional racism is rampant.
Yes.
And there's no nice way to put that.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people are just not exposed to it. It's so ingrained in our society that we just grow up believing this is the way it's supposed to be. And I think that one of the worst things that's happened as we've made this progress is the fact that we don't feel comfortable talking about it anymore. You know, no one wants to talk about racial issues because they make us uncomfortable. You know, but if we don't name things, if we don't give point things out and give them the power so we can discuss them, then the situation can't change.
Right. And Twitter's the worst place for that. That's why I'm so glad you accepted my opportunity to talk on something that isn't 140 characters or less, because I saw that. I saw people. At first, I was getting angry towards people and what they were saying to me. And then I saw that there, it was representing something bigger than anything I can conceive of. And I don't know what it's like being Black in America. I don't know what it's like to have that psychic wound of just oppression that you guys have been through. I have no idea how to conceive of that. So that being said, I should never have even breached the topic. And I'm not a racial comedian. This isn't like my thing. I'm starting to find this so fascinating. I mean, I wrote a blog once about how the war on drugs is a shell game. It's a war on poverty, because I know rich people with a lot of privilege, I guess is the word people are now using, but that'll do tons of coke and they don't rob anybody because they're rich. And then like someone less fortunate would do, you know, would rob someone. Then they'd be like, oh, it's because they're on drugs. It's like, no, because they're fucking poor, you know? And I think that that is one of the issues facing a lot of Black communities, is that it's not drugs. Like, oh, if only they didn't get on drugs. It's like, no, they don't have anything. And when you back someone into a corner, they do what they have to survive. And I've always been very vocal and sympathetic about that. I'm glad I knew very little about the Black Panthers. I truly thought that they were a terrorist organization until I'm reading Survival Pending Revolution and The Burglary, which is 1971. I guess I just got into it, but someone recommended it that they emailed to me. And I guess they stole a bunch of FBI stuff that revealed that the FBI was breaking the Constitution to try and keep these groups down, including Martin Luther King Jr. and the Black Panthers. So this is shit that I wasn't taught. I'm sure a lot of people listening have no idea. And that's why I'm so glad we're having this dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I spoke to my father, who he was about 15 at the time, and he first encountered the Black Panthers as they were doing one of their free breakfast programs in a housing project in Richmond, Virginia. And you know, he was very intrigued. You have to understand, you know, what life was like, you know, for people of my parents' age back then, especially growing up in the South. He's from Richmond, Virginia. And he spoke about, you know, being very intrigued, attending meetings and listening to hear what they had to say, but also being very scared because, you know, they know that the FBI is watching them. They know that there's informants in the room. He mentioned people being set up for drug charges, people informed against, and even his own man being put on a list of sorts of suspected Black Panther members. And once again, parallels to today. You've seen on Twitter that the FBI has been monitoring the Twitter accounts and social media accounts and communications with Black Lives Matter activists today. So, you know, history has a way of repeating itself, and especially has a way of repeating itself if people aren't aware of history. So, you know, the big disservice that's been done to Americans of all colors and all races has been just the complete lack of an honest accounting of American history so that we can be aware of what's going on today that directly parallels that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, because it's the repetition of cycles that drive me crazy. And when you see something happen over and over again, you're like, can we just, that's why I'm so opposed to Donald Trump's rhetoric about, you know, you can't ban a religion or a group of people from entering the United States. That to me sounds so fascist, and like that never will end well. And it's the same with the Confederate flag. I felt the same way, but to be honest, I felt that way watching, you know, the BPP celebration. That being said, I know what you're saying now, in the sense that, you know, a group of people that really want pride in themselves and need pride in themselves. And that as a full dance, you know, number and as a full artistic expression, I can understand how it's much less destructive and probably more artistic than I thought at the time, you know, cause you have the unifying of the people. I'm just all about unity. I don't like racial divisions. I don't want to have to explain to my son if he's white or Hispanic or who's right or wrong or what's, you know, as people keep mixing, it's like, it's very complicated. And my grandparents, one was Irish Catholic, one was Czech Jew, and they used to fight like cats and dogs. And then it slowly kind of just chilled out. But I just think a question I want to ask you before, I know you have to go, but, is what do we do? Like what now, what do you think we do? Like, how do we, you know, fight this sort of legislation that keeps people oppressed, or how do we, the interpersonal stuff, like how do we not immediately go to race on Twitter or all the attacks and all the crazy divisions? How do we stop that?
Well, the first thing you have to do is we're going to all have to admit to a certain set of truths. And the truth that exists today in 2016 is that all Americans are not treated equally by our government, by our society. That's the truth as it is right now. We can't shy away from that. We can't, you know, put our blinders on and say that we're not going to discuss this. One of the biggest mistakes that I believe that's happened with the millennial generation is that a lot of well-meaning parents have raised their kids to be quote-unquote colorblind.
Right.
I don't see color, you know, I don't see race, et cetera, everybody's equal.
Right.
And it's like, that's a fine philosophy. But unfortunately, America sees color. America sees race.
And it's kind of condescending. It's almost like if someone's going to say an eye for an eye till the whole world's blind, they shouldn't be on the beneficial group. It has to be the Gandhi or the Jesus who says that. It can't be, you know, imagine if like Britain occupying India said an eye for an eye till the whole world's blind. It's like, yeah, well, you're kind of oppressing us, you know? So that's why it doesn't always fly when someone's like, I'm colorblind. It's like, yeah, you're an heir to a fortune. You know what I mean? It's like they have a way of just saying that, like, I'm not colorblind. I believe in human equality. I think we are all equal and should have all the same equal. But like, I've always been very annoyed by people that are just, they say they're colorblind when they clearly are not. You know what I'm saying?
Well, all that colorblind means is that we do see color. It's just not polite to talk about it.
Right.
And that brings up that division where we can't have honest conversations about race, and we can't have honest conversations about the conditions in which certain people in America live, where they're basically not protected by the Constitution. The people of Ferguson, Missouri, were not protected by the Constitution. They had a government that used its own citizens as a source of revenue and completely abused them, applied the law in 100% unfair ways. And for when we saw the things that happened in Ferguson, you know, people want to call that a riot. But that wasn't a riot. That was a revolution. That was the people of that area who had been oppressed by their government rising up and throwing their chains off and saying, we're not going to take this anymore. And since they did that, you know, what have we seen happen in Ferguson? We've seen the DOJ come in. They've exposed the policing for profit regime. They've exposed the rampant departmental racism. You know, the municipal judge, the chief of police, the second in command of police, the county clerk, all of whom were sharing racist emails with each other, and while at the same time, you know, applying high fines to low offenses that were pretty much all directed at black people. I mean, that's the Constitution being shredded. And you could almost forgive someone for just saying, you know what, I'm going to make enough noise so that they can't ignore us anymore. And that's kind of what I think Beyonce did. I think she advanced the discussion by saying, hey, wait a minute, mainstream America, this isn't going away. This is something we're going to have to deal with, if only so that we don't visit it upon the next generation. Like you, I also have a young son. And what keeps me awake at night is that somebody is going to see him as a threat when he's not.
Right. Yeah, I can't imagine.
He's a lot older. Or he looks older than what he is. And, you know, the Tamir Rice situation where, you know, he's playing with a toy gun in the park next to his house. The police drive up onto the park and shoot him. You know, that keeps me awake at night, that he'll have the same experiences that I've had, that my parents have had, you know, that my brothers have had and sisters have had, you know, growing up. And our generation has to do something about that. But it can only be done if we have the phrase for it is like a truth and reconciliation. You know, we need to come out and we need to say, okay, this is the truth of what's happened in the past. This is the truth of what's happening now. And now we can reconcile and go forward into the solutions phase. And I think a lot of, somewhere you went wrong was that you kind of waded into a discussion that's been going on for a few years now amongst, you know, the people of Twitter, obviously, but amongst a lot of people who are interested in this. And we're kind of like past the whole dispelling of false information stage.
Right.
And it really annoys us when, like, you know, you have somebody who's new to it who wants to jump into the conversation, and then we have to redo all of the dispelling of false information. No, this stereotype's not right. No, that stereotype's not right. No, this is what really happened. You know, and we really are moving towards, like, the solutions phase. So I think you're going to see a lot of solutions. And here's the kicker. The solutions that we're fighting for, the solutions that, like, groups like Black Lives Matter are fighting for, they're good for all Americans. They're good for
100%,
everybody.
100%.
You want to hold your police accountable. You want to have economic parity and economic justice. It hurts our economy. Racism hurts our economy to the tune of billions of dollars a year. It's bad for business. And it creates divisiveness amongst our citizens.
Yeah, and it's also just shitty. Like, you don't, like, fear sucks. Like, no one wants, you know what I mean? And all sides, all groups do not benefit from inequality. You're absolutely right. Like, the rich guy with the house on the hill, he lives in fear. And then everyone else lives in fear. It's like, unless you're right. Unless people just talk. And one of the reasons, I guess, I wandered into this beehive is I don't discuss race. I'm not a racial comedian. As I said earlier, it's not something I tweet about. For me, it was just, I was tweeting more like, so Janet Jackson shows a nipple and she's annihilated, and the, you know, and Beyonce, I was coming from that. Ironically, it was not race-based. I was also kind of thinking like BPP used to have the Book of Mao in their pocket, and you have a bunch of capitalists profiting, you know. I kind of poke at hypocrisy, and I was way out of my league on this thing. And that's why I'm so glad that we could have a conversation, because people perceived me as something I wasn't. And I am all about discussion, as you can see, and you seem like you are too. And my hat goes off to you, and I really appreciate this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just believe, you know, living in the area that I live with the social scene that I have, you know, it's a very, very diverse social scene, and there's room for all kinds of ideas. But you know, it was kind of like one of the things that I had expressed to you on Twitter, was that there is a place for white people in this discussion. You know, there has to be. We can't move forward unless we hear from all voices. But if you're going to participate in an honest discussion, we have to be honest about the current situation. We have to be honest about the past situation. And a lot of people are still putting their heads in the sand. A lot of people are still bringing up old stereotypes. And these stereotypes, they come up in every single instance in which there is a movement for Black empowerment. It came up in the Reconstruction era after Civil War. It came up in the 1960s. It comes up again in the 1980s and 90s. And it's coming up again today. We're going to keep revisiting these same memes, these same ideas and stereotypes, until we've dealt with them all. And it's not something that's going to happen overnight. These ideas, these stereotypes that oppress people and that hold people down, they were specifically designed and engendered and put into our society. They didn't come from nowhere. They've just been around so long that people just automatically take them as truth and for granted. And those things have to be stripped away. And honestly, the white supremacy that exists in this country has to be stripped away. If you want to reach that world that you expressed, that you felt, we're all equal, Black people and white people, we're all just people, you know, it's really more class-based than race-based. You know, if we want to reach that stage, that plane, then we're definitely going to have to strip away the white supremacy that rules America and still rules America, you know, and that's going to be tough for a lot of people. A lot of people they've grown up with, they have a certain place in the social economic order, they have a certain place in the pecking order, and they're not going to be willing to give that up, you know, but that's what equality is going to ask of us. It's going to ask every one of us to sit and look at our own privilege, look at, you know, how we live our lives, and it's going to ask sacrifice of us. I mean, I understand, you know, that I personally have privilege, even over other Black people. You know, I'm a lighter skin, I have a good education, I came from a middle-class background, et cetera, et cetera. So I have those privileges, and I have to use my privilege to make the world a better place. And I felt like Beyonce was using her privilege as, you know, the one of the, you know, preeminent entertainers in America and her large platform to make the world a better place. So, like, I just felt like you're kind of off base a little bit there when you're trying to, you know, use her privilege as part of her an indicator of her hypocrisy, because she was actually trying to use her privilege to lift up and to put out there, you know, these things that are happening that a lot of people are blind to. It's very, very easy if you don't have a diverse social group. If you don't, and a lot of people don't. America is quite segregated still. In 2016, it's very segregated.
I completely agree.
No, other people.
Yeah, that's
of different races.
That's why I think military and comedy both have that cool thing that happens where we work with. There is no racial thing. I mean, so many jobs have a racial component to it. You know, I'm sure like the steel barons are like white, you know. Comedians and military are both just there is absolutely no racial barriers in comedy. And when I tour, I'll be doing, you know, I'd say 30% of my shows are almost all black. You know, it's like, I've never had an issue in person ever when it comes to an issue like this. There's something kind of messed up about Twitter. I may kind of pull back on that whole thing, 'cause I think people get like a fragment of an idea and then a whole person starts forming around this rib bone, this, like, you know, as an archaeologist could maybe find a bottle cap and then shape a whole thing around that. And it's just for issues like this, there's just, I have a really hard time with Twitter, but I do apologize for comparing it to a hate group, 'cause it's not, but I do think that the violent component made people uneasy. But I agree with everything you said when it comes to acknowledgement is huge. When you acknowledge something, you take the venom out of it. You say, well, this is reality. This is what is real. And if we all want the same thing, which is a safer world for our children, our grandchildren, in a world without arbitrary hate based on old thoughts that have been scientifically disproven and are, you know, only possessed by idiots, then you have to just let it all go. And I'm Ali, I now consider you a friend, and I'm glad you called in, bud.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, and I'm glad that you had me on your podcast.
All right, man. Stay in touch with me. You're awesome.
Absolutely. Have a good day.
All right, peace.